Welcome to Warm It Up Virtual Summit, brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce you the amazing Ms. Ann Riddells. Ann, won't you take it from here?
Sure. So often when I tell people about the epidemic of post-traumatic stress in this country, they reply, well, what does that have to do with me? I've never been in the military. But combat post-traumatic stress is just one of many forms of post-traumatic stress. And as you'll recall from my previous summit presentations in April and May, people can have post-traumatic stress just from being treated day after day as less than human. Those who have post-traumatic stress are then compelled to recreate their traumas and avoid anything that reminds them of these traumas. And these traumas can be and are recreated within every aspect of our society, which is why post-traumatic stress has spread so rapidly. Most people are recreating their unresolved traumas in some way and then denying what they have done. Or they admit to only the tip of an enormous iceberg of their traumatic recreations. In their avoidance of their traumas, they may not even admit to themselves what they've done, because people with post-traumatic stress can't see the extent of their symptoms. They end up hurting a large number of people over their lifetimes, themselves included. With so many people passing on their pain, denying what they have done and their need for treatment, most kids endure a lot of trauma in the process of growing up. This trauma includes the well-known abuses of physical and psychological bodies, but it also includes these kids not getting their human developmental needs consistently met. I'm referring here to caregivers not tending to the growth of their children's hearts and minds as much as that of their physical bodies. One of the ways we can know that so many kids are traumatized is by just how many adults are suffering from post-traumatic stress. To help you see what I mean, let me go over the three phases of post-traumatic stress with you so you might understand the enormity of what I'm saying. When a person has been stressed to a certain degree, she succumbs to the first phase of post-traumatic stress, known as the equivalency phase. And in this phase, a person sees things that are different as the same. So let's say a mom goes outside and sees her two young children crying, one because she was bitten by a mosquito, and the other because he was hit by a car driven by a reckless drunk driver. If this mom is in the equivalency phase of post-traumatic stress, her kids' needs seem the same because they're both crying. She decides they're both making a mountain out of a molehill, so she does nothing. Now, this is a physical example that might seem far-fetched, but in the psychological realm, this happens routinely. I find most people know their loved ones are wounded or broken in certain areas, but they don't get them the professional help they need. And the reason there are so many wounded and broken adults is because as children, these people's traumatic wounds and internal brokenness were never adequately addressed. When a person has been stressed even more, she goes into the second phase of post-traumatic stress, which is called the paradoxical phase. And this is when perception turns upside down and a person sees the opposite of the truth. If this mom were in the paradoxical phase of post-traumatic stress, she would decide that her little girl, who was bitten by a mosquito, is more important than her little boy who was hit by a car. The little girl would get her attention and care, while the boy and his needs would be ignored as less important. Again, this example may seem unfathomable, but I find most people are not attending to the great need of their traumatized psychological bodies or souls. And what they do to give attention is so trivial. What they do give attention is so trivial in comparison. When a person is consistently and overwhelmingly stressed beyond her ability to cope, she enters the third phase of post-traumatic stress. Someone in this ultra-paradoxical phase turns everything not only upside down, but to the extreme, those that this person once disliked or even hated, such as her abusers and those like them, are now loved. Those she would have once loved or respected, such as those offering help, are now viewed with condescension, suspicion, or derision. For example, if this mom were in the ultra-paradoxical phase, she would insist the drunk motorist didn't mean any harm, and her little boy was the reckless one. He, the innocent victim, would be the one worthy of punishment. She would berate her son and insist that he apologize for getting in the way of the recklessly driven car, even though it was clear by the tire marks that the driver drove into their yard. The devastating thing about those stuck in ultra-paradoxical post-traumatic stress is not only are the victims and their would-be rescuers blamed and unmercifully treated, but victimizers, like this drunk driver, get away with their crimes. For example, this reckless driver may hit yet another child as time passes, since no one is holding him accountable for his wayward actions. How this post-traumatic stress shows up in most of our lives is that we so often blame the voice that lets us know that our psychological bodies or souls need attention. Whether this voice expresses itself through illness, an accident, or some obvious lapse in our usual responsible and respectful behavior. How often do we responsibly and respectfully look into how we are driving our lives, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, and holding ourselves accountable for making improvements? Now, I see these three phases of post-traumatic stress on a daily basis, particularly in the news. Again, people in the equivalency phase see people, places, and things that are different as exactly the same. So these people say things like, oh, all Democrats are A, B, and C, or all Republicans are X, Y, and Z, rather than seeing there are many different types of people in each party, some of whom know our country is in serious trouble and are trying to help. Some have paradoxical post-traumatic stress, however, and are more focused on mosquitoes. People in the equivalency phase not only see things that are different as exactly the same, but they can also see choices that are truly the same as very different. For example, they may see a Democratic candidate as totally different from a Republican candidate when these candidates have much in common, such as both are using their political positions for personal gain. An example of the paradoxical phase in politics would be using limited funds toward non-essential projects while ignoring key areas that desperately need money. People with post-traumatic stress in politics can be incompetent, wasting precious funds. And they can also do horrible things, some of which are well documented, yet they get plenty of votes. And this is ultra-paradoxical post-traumatic stress, when we give our admiration and support to those worthy of our disdain. We then typically judge harshly those who speak the truth of what's going on. We see truth-sayers as the troublemakers. So post-traumatic stress is indeed the modern-day plague, which is causing grievous repercussions throughout our country and our world. And the reason it is spreading so rapidly is because people with post-traumatic stress are not just in our families and governments. They're in every aspect of our society, recreating their traumas and then avoiding what they and others with post-traumatic stress are doing. Let's look for a moment at post-traumatic stress in medicine. The same three phases of post-traumatic stress that I mentioned to you can be found in healthcare professionals. Using the example of the mom who heard her two children screaming, her daughter because she was bitten by a mosquito, and her small son because he was hit by a drunk driver. As I mentioned, If she were in the equivalency phase, these two children would seem the same, making a mountain out of a molehill. Let's say that little boy grew up and became a doctor, an unconscious attempt to get his own ignored medical needs met through his doctoring of others. If he, as an adult, were in the equivalency phase of post-traumatic stress, he may assume all females are like his sister, complaining over nothing. So he wouldn't take the complaints of his female patients seriously. All doctors in the equivalency phase tend to see things that are different as the same. For example, they learned about the potential perils of bacterial infections in medical school and are quick to give an antibiotic for every infection in their patients. They don't consider the fact that many infections are different. They are viral in origin, and antibiotics have no effect on viruses. Also, not all bacteria are bad. Some, such as those in the gut, are different. They aid digestion and are essential for the human body. Routine intake of antibiotics can hurt these healthy bugs. Equivalency phase doctors may follow the same protocols on all patients, but using a blood thinner on a person who sits around the house most of the day and one who has a very active, unpredictable life outdoors on most days can have two very different consequences. Yes, equivalency phase docs can treat all people with a particular diagnosis exactly the same because they believe scientific research and health statistics apply to everyone equally. They don't see each patient as a unique individual whose physical illness is communicating something about his or her psychological condition. They don't understand that those who know this and seek to change themselves in a constructive way have a much better prognosis. Remember, the equivalency phase can also manifest as people seeing what is the same as very different. For example, the medical profession has a unique term for those whose psychological problems are obviously creating their physical problems. It's called psychosomatic. And equivalency phase docs don't understand that every illness, accident, or injury has a psychological component. For example, any problems with our emotional hearts may express themselves with physical heart disease. When what's on our minds is hurtful, we may succumb to some form of brain injury. The second phase of post-traumatic stress is the paradoxical phase. And I mentioned that this is where perceptions turn upside down. I gave the example of the mother with two children thinking her daughter's mosquito bite was more important than her son's injuries after being hit by a car. Now, doctors with paradoxical post-traumatic stress do many similar things. For example, they focus on erasing physical symptoms. These physical symptoms are the soul's voice, a way that the psychological body seeks attention. Paradoxical docs treat the body in such a way to make this voice of the soul go away, or at least soften in intensity. Their methods would be like this mom putting tape over the mouths of her two children and feeling the problems are solved. In every sick person, the psychological body needs treatment just as much as the physical body. But this psychological body or soul is ignored by paradoxical docs, which makes it cry louder, sooner or later, in order to be heard. The third phase of post-traumatic stress is the ultra-paradoxical phase, where perceptions not only turn upside down, but they also become extreme. Remember the ultra-paradoxical mom berating her little boy for his injuries caused by a drunk driver? A doctor with ultra-paradoxical post-traumatic stress does something similar. He punishes the body, the soul's messenger, by using brutal treatments. Drugging, cutting, poisoning, freezing, and burning. When his harsh and invasive methods do not work over the long haul, he declares the illness to be powerful and unconquerable, the cause of all his patients' suffering. He consoles these patients for being innocent victims of a terrible disease, which has nothing to do with them or their less than healthy life choices. Yes, their habits of filling their stomachs with toxin-laden food or processed foods, or filling their minds with propaganda and other deception, has no bearing on their illness, according to the ultra-paradoxical doc. The fact that his patients are out of touch with their true feelings or are not expressing these true feelings is also insignificant to this traumatized doctor. True to his post-traumatic stress, he avoids how his patients recreate their traumas with their own bodies. Instead, he compliments his patients for being so valiant and putting up such a good fight against a truly formidable disease process. He praises them for following his treatment plans, labeling them as good patients. In contrast, those who question his upside-down and extreme ways, he labels bad patients. I've heard of some of these ultra-paradoxical docs turning away a person who, quote, rebels against their methods, such as a parent not wanting to follow the current excessive vaccine schedule with her babies. There's plenty of evidence of children growing up normally until their first vaccines and never being normal again. Yet the ultra-paradoxical doc looks at literature more than all the lives that were forever changed by doctors following medical protocols over the needs and wishes of patients and their concerned families. Now for a personal example. I broke my arm last year, and the hospital protocol was to do surgery on that type of break. I had to refuse the phlebotomist who came to draw blood in preparation for my surgery. I had to turn away the technician with the portable x-ray machine who came to get a chest x-ray in preparation for surgery. When I finally saw the orthopedic surgeon on call, he said that a small percentage of patients have an adverse reaction to the type of break that I had when treated with a cast alone. I thought, the larger percentage of people have to endure surgery in order to treat the small percentage that actually need it? To me, this makes sense only to someone with ultra-paradoxical post-traumatic stress. I told my doctor that I'd prayed about my circumstances and was told I didn't need surgery. He said that God uses doctors to heal people. I said, I realize that, but in this particular case, I didn't need such an extreme kind of help. Just a cast would do. Fortunately, he honored my requests, and I'm pleased to say that my arm healed very nicely with only a cast. And I share all this today because I've seen so much harm caused by healthcare practitioners suffering from the three phases of post-traumatic stress. In fact, the whole medical system seems ultra-paradoxical to me, putting the inanimate in the power position, believing our man-made medicines and procedures are the most powerful cures. In my experience, people who desire healing, as evidenced by they're doing whatever it takes, not just with physical methods, but psychological methods as well, are far more potent vehicles of healing. These humans have the ability to hear the soul and respond to its requests for change. Unfortunately, most patients have post-traumatic stress themselves, and in their equivalency phase, they think all doctors or all their methods are basically the same. Or in their paradoxical post-traumatic stress, they seek a practitioner who recreates their traumas with them by using painful or disabling treatments and avoiding more gentle or effective methods. Or in their ultra-paradoxical post-traumatic stress, patients may choose a doctor who helps them by ending their lives. It's not surprising that those who suffer from post-traumatic stress avoid treatment. It feels traumatic to face the painful truth of our lives. To address this pain avoidance, the souls within these folks will seek others suffering from PTS to act out their mutually unresolved traumatic experiences. For example, in a typical dysfunctional marriage, one person with post-traumatic stress will actively act out these past traumas, while the other person with post-traumatic stress passively participates. So often each person points a finger at the other rather than realize that both have post-traumatic stress and they're merely playing different roles in a scene that resonates with an unresolved trauma within each of them. Let's take, for example, Tim and Rita. Rita is the apparent victimizer and Tim is the apparent victim. While Tim is busy making a living each day so he can financially support his wife and children, Rita is busy watching TV, surfing the internet, and chatting on Facebook. Tim comes home each day to a messy home, no food on the table, and young children in desperate need of attention. "She wasn't like this when we were dating and talking about our future life together," Tim says with dismay. All his begging and pleading did not change his wife's behavior, so he was considering going into debt in order to hire a housekeeper slash cook who could also help with the children. In any relationship problem, one person is often the obvious active victimizer and the other is the passive one. Anytime someone consistently hurts another human being, he or she is calling for help on a soul level. And if the spouse does not meet that need by seeking professional help, this is passive victimization or neglect, refusing to help someone in need. Tim must have been neglected in some way as a boy, and he's recreating his past trauma by neglecting his wife's need for trauma counseling. Neither party can recover from post-traumatic stress as long as the cycle of abuse and neglect continues. Now, I realize that some people can become violent in their ultra-paradoxical post-traumatic stress and perceive help as harm. They fight off helpers as if their lives are at stake. So a person has to be careful and prayerful. Again, professional help is in order to help both parties understand what traumas they are recreating and help them work through these traumas. I've known couples to suffer for years, enduring one another's traumatic recreations, both unwilling to address the underlying call for help to recover from their psychologically traumatic injuries. I think we've all seen the devastation in families where heads of household recreate their traumas with other family members. But these same dynamics go on with leadership in any organization, institution, or political party. When these leaders have post-traumatic stress, they may act out their unresolved traumas on a grand scale and then avoid addressing what they've done. We have to be so careful and prayerful of whom we allow to guide us. Just know that if we make a mistake and choose someone who recreates or avoids their traumas with us, we have the opportunity to look in the mirror and perhaps see the devastation caused by our own post-traumatic stress. The good news is post-traumatic stress is curable if people are willing to admit the truth of what happened, express their genuine thoughts and feelings, and give themselves what will further their journey of psychological development. I have a lot of information about growth and development on my website, annthelistener.com. That's A-N-N-E, thelistener.com. I also sell my three developmental books there. I offer a free 30-minute listening session to anyone who wants to explore their post-traumatic stress and do their part in turning the tide on this raging epidemic. I hope you will contact me at annthelistener@yahoo.com.